Tonight's speaker, Jim Hightower, a plain-spoken populist, author, fiery agitator, has been speaking truth to power all over the country for decades. Let's give the former Texas Commissioner of Agriculture, Jim Hightower, a big round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm just tempted just to say amen. You know, we adjourned to the bar. Pretty well been said here, I think. But I do thank Larry Ginter. He called me an agitator, but he is a champion agitator. And remember this, that agitator is the center post in the washing machine that gets the dirt out. We need more of them. And thanks to all the volunteers who helped put this great event together, not just tonight, but the week-long events that you're having here. Sharon Donovan, who's been working closely with me, but has done so much on it, too. And thanks, to Cardinal Turkson, for his presence and for sharing his position and his legitimacy, not just with the insiders tomorrow night, but with us outsiders tonight. That's a big step. It doesn't get us there, but it gets us closer. And, of course, Frank Cordaro, everybody knows him. You know, Oscar Wilde said, "Be yourself, everyone else is already taken." That pretty well describes Frank, doesn't it? Well, it just makes me happier than a flea at a dog show to be standing up here. Looking out at all you grand prize occupiers, you grassroots champions of common sense and the common good, you corporate greed whackers and GMO butt kickers, you agitators too, agitators for food policies based not on profits and patents of middleman monopolists, but on sustainability, stewardship, and the core human values of economic fairness, social justice, and equal opportunity for all people. That's what America stands for. So I thank you for allowing a scruffy Texas populist to come in here and not even have me dipped at the border first. I know there's what with Congress doing its stuff, there's quite a bit of national fear about mad Texas disease, so I understand that. But it is a joy for me to join you here in this sanctuary as part of your extraordinary week of action as you strategize and organize, energize, harmonize, and mobilize for your ongoing, growing, inspiring battle against the powerful forces of arrogance and avarice that are loose on the land. How appropriate that we gather here tonight in this good church, and how satisfying and edifying to be blessed by the President's thoughts and spirit of His Eminence, Cardinal Turkson. The involvement of the church community is altogether fitting for the proliferation of proprietary industrial agriculture by predatory profiteering corporations is fundamentally a moral issue, as both the bishop and the cardinal suggested there. It comes down to an ancient Latin phrase that asks, qui bono? Who benefits? That's the question of GMOs. Qui bono? The corporate few or the many? Cardinal previously offered these words: why force an African farmer to buy seeds produced in other lands and by other means? This is the usual game of economic dependence. It's a game not just in Ghana and other developing nations, but in this nation as well. Occupy Wall Street and Occupy the World Food Prize are both addressing that widening chasm of inequity between the rich and the rest of us. To borrow a wonderful phrase of Pope Francis, Excuse me if I use strong words here. Monsanto doesn't care about the world's poor and hungry. Monsanto doesn't even care about them here in the United States. We recently passed, the House did a farm bill that ripped out all food stamps out of it. Monsanto's huge lobbying corps made not a peep of protest about that. Could have. Monsanto cares about the stock price and profits and big investors, period. It's bullying of farmers. It's lying PR campaigns. It's corruption of our government. It's dishonest hide-the-pea, flim-flamming of consumers. Our pitch-perfect example of what Pope Francis meant when he said back in May at a youth conference, we have created new idols. The worship of the golden calf of old has found a new and heartless image in the cult of money and the dictatorship of an economy which is faceless and lacking any truly humane goal. That's from our Pope. So I come a few hundred miles up from I-35 from Austin, Texas, chiefly to say thank you for the work you're doing of democracy building, for having the guts and the gumption to confront the greed heads and boneheads, to challenge the conventional wisdom spewed out relentlessly by the big shots, bastards, and BSers who feel entitled to run roughshod over the world's farmers, over nature, over democracy, over truth, all for nothing more than money. Nothing more noble than money. They think they're the top dogs, and we're just a bunch of fire hydrants, out here in the countryside. Not easy, I know, to go against the moneyed elite. You get to feeling like that guy that B.B. King sang about, nobody likes you but your mama, and she might be jiving you too. I know some of you have had that feeling before. But going against the moneyed elites is essential if we're ever to live in the kind of world we want. I come to you not just from Austin, Texas, but from South Austin. We have a little different attitude over on the south side. We're fairly irreverent. We have our unofficial slogan over there is, we're all here because we're not all there. Well, I think we're all here tonight because the corporate and political and media powers that be, excuse the redundancy there, are not at all there on the reality that food is life, it's culture, it is community, not just a commodity to be manipulated for selfish gain. Let me be frank, or Bob, or Bubba, or whoever, I'll be Jim. The World Prize Group has lost its way on this one. This is a group that rather grandly has dubbed its award the Nobel Prize for Agriculture. But to award it to a profiteer like this turns it into the ignoble prize, really. WFP is as confused as goats on AstroTurf if they think that GMO hucksters have anything to do with agriculture. The bishop expressed this and was exactly right. You good, feisty people have put yourselves smack dab on the front line of a big, hugely important battle over what kind of country we're going to be, over who we're going to be as a people. Woodrow Wilson, when he first went to Washington, said, if you want to make enemies, try changing something. Well, all you're trying to change is half a century of collusion between corporate powers and government to strip culture out of agriculture and replace it with agribusiness. Earl Butz, remember Uncle Earl? Of course, he infamously barked to family farmers in around 1970, agriculture is no longer a way of life, it's a business. Get big or get out. And then he proceeded, as Nixon's agriculture secretary, to shove tens of thousands of good farmers out by pushing policies that empowered the big banks, the giant exporters, and the chemical sellers like Monsanto to squeeze farmers. Around 1980, I was here in Iowa. I was ag commissioner then. George Snyder was with us, and we were at one of these tractorcade farm rally things. A farmer came up and said, "Do you know the difference between a pigeon and a farmer?" I said, "No." He said, "A pigeon can still make a deposit on a John Deere." Well, as a result, corporate interests remade agriculture in their image, giving us an industrialized, conglomeratized, monopolized, Wall Streetized, plasticized, giantized, heavily subsidized food production system that is plutocratic, hierarchical, and exploitative. You don't need an IQ much higher than room temperature to figure out that that works great for the profiteering few, but not so much for the ones who are being run roughshod over, the family farmers, independent local businesses, our rural communities, soil and water, food workers, consumers, food itself. How did this happen? That we let the Earl Buttses and the Monsantos, what happened here? Well, there's one word, P-O-L-I-T-I-C-S, politics. We were in the 50s and 60s and 70s, Americans sort of cranked back in the lazy boy and doing some 12-ounce elbow bends and, you know, didn't pay a whole lot of attention to agricultural policy. It was such a boring topic, agricultural policy. But that meant that the lobbyists, these corporations were able to hijack our food policy. In fact, corporate lobbyists and lawyers and economists, people who could not run a watermelon stand if we gave them the melons and had the highway patrol flag down the customers for them, were in charge of making food policy. So the result is not only the demise of family farms and rural America, but food itself is torture. We poison it, radiate it, confine it, contaminate it, genetically alter it, generally mess with Mama Nature and call it progress. Want to know where we're going? Here's a corporate cloner back in 2008 saying, "We can make every cow precisely like its progenitor. This eliminates uncertainty in meat production, for every cut can be the exact same texture, taste, and composition. We have achieved the efficiency of the assembly line inside the animal itself." That's a happy view, isn't it? Well, back in 1972, Susan DeMarco and I wrote a book called Hard Tomatoes, Hard Times. It was one of the first exposés of the land-grant college system and what it was doing, siding with the corporate interests against farmers, against rural communities, against workers, consumers, et cetera. And in doing the research for that book, the Hard Tomatoes came from the title, Hard Tomatoes, Hard Times, came from the fact that the land-grant college in California, UC Davis, got word from Del Monte Corporation that they wanted a mechanical harvester of tomatoes because they wanted to eliminate workers and eliminate small tomato farmers. So UC Davis made them a tomato harvester, but the harvesters squished the tomatoes. So then UC Davis, with the University of Florida, made them a hard tomato that would not be squished by the harvester. So that's where that tomato came from. And DeMarco, in doing the research for this, went to see the head of research at the U.S. Department of, by God, Agriculture in his office, and he was really proud of these tomatoes. You know, by God, he had one on his desk, and he said, "Man, by God, they'll last for 3 months. You know, you can ship them anywhere. Wonderful." And Susan, who's from New Jersey, said, "Well, yeah, but, you know, they don't quite have that good flavor that I remember growing up with there in those Jersey tomatoes." And he leaned over to her and he said, "Your children will never know the difference." This is what we're dealing with. This is the mentality that we're dealing with. Yet, that's where you came in. Look around the sanctuary. You are the children. You are the ones who finally said no. I've had farmer after farmer saying, "That's not what I want to do." And plenty of consumers say, "Well, these things are ridiculous. And then workers saying, you know, they've been shut out as well. Of course, farming is a business, but it's a good business because it is a way of life. That's what makes it possible. That's why people want to do it. I read about a guy, Lee Jones, over in Ohio near Columbus. He's a sustainable farmer over there. And he was asked by an interviewer, said, what would you be if you were not a farmer? And he said, disappointed. And that's the attitude. The realization that agriculture is the art and science of cooperating with nature. Not always trying to develop the next nuclear weapon to overwhelm nature. Your fight here is a part of ongoing grassroots, cross-country, worldwide upchuck rebellion by farmers and consumers, environmentalists, and others that rejects GMOs, that rejects factory farms, that rejects the poisoning of our food and our water and our air and our animals and ourselves in the process. It's a truly populist revolt. And the good news that I bring to you, I'm a lucky duck, I get to travel a whole lot, and I've been just about every place that's got a zip code, I think, and everywhere out there. There's good folks like you who are in rebellion against corporate power generally, but specifically against this food issue, food contamination. And they are on the move. You know, last Saturday we had protests here. We had one in Austin. We had one in 30-something cities around the country on the GMO issue alone. This good food movement, every community, when I became ag commissioner, there was not a farmer's market left in the state. And so we moved in with a farmer's market program. We moved in to help create co-ops so farmers could sell directly to supermarkets and directly into the international market. You didn't need Cargill to handle the deal and rip you off. We got into helping local farmers produce for white tablecloth restaurants and others, and the sort of stuff, the locavore movement that's now common. But at the time, it was quite uncommon, but it worked because people were looking for a way to do it. And our role as a state government was not to own anything. We didn't manage anything. We were just the catalyst. You know, the free and free enterprise is not an adjective. It's a verb. You've got to free up the enterprise of people because they're locked out of the marketplace. They're locked out of the voting booth. They're locked out of a lot of things these days. So you got to free people up. And so our role was simply to provide some tools, some people who knew what they were doing, some people who identified with the community and the community could identify with them, people who were good organizers, that old nasty phrase, community organizer, that's what we were involved in. And it works, as Iowa CCI knows so well. The great work that you people do is tremendous inspiration to us all. So, the powers that be pretend that their way is the only way. And indeed, they're telling reporters right here, this very day, well, you can't do without the corporations. And these people, who are these people, these little people? They can't change the system. Well, a friend of mine who's been a pioneer in the organic movement once said to me, he said, those who say it can't be done should not interrupt those who are doing it. That would be it. And it's, ironically, happening right here. Front page of today's Des Moines Register features a sustainable organic farmer right here. While they're over there talking about how, no, this won't work, here's somebody who was a conventional farm family, four generations, saying, yes, it does work. And it's better for us, and it's better for the environment, it's better for food itself, it's better for consumers, it's better for our community. And inside is a columnist who interviewed Frankie LePay, great lady, both of them, the columnist and Frankie, who points out, you know, right there in southern India, in the Andhra Pradesh state, some 5,000 women in 70 villages save and share seeds. They farm organically in a cooperative. They grow an abundance of food. They're engaged in water conservation, synergistic cropping patterns, and they have a cooperative marketing program. puts the lie to everything they're saying up there. It's in the newspaper this very morning. The biggest, fastest growing, most promising development in world agriculture is the good food movement, which is what you represent. It's a movement that is reunifying producers with eaters, rural with urban, economics with environment, pragmatism with idealism, value with values. So my message to you, and I'm sure you're wondering what it is by now, is that it's up to us, you and me. No political party, no politician is going to fix this for us. They use fix in the same way your veterinarian uses fix. No magic, no miracle, just us. Justice, just us. That's the way we get justice, by stepping forward. Yes. I was up in Vermont not long ago with our friend Bernie Sanders doing some campaigning for him. And we're in Montpelier, the state capital there, and political event. And yes, applaud Bernie, yeah. And Elizabeth Warren, and Sherrod Brown, and... We're not without allies. That's important to remember. When we diss Congress, it's very easy to do that. It's almost impossible not to do that these days. But recognize that we have troops in there, and we just need more of them. So we've got to keep pushing that. Well, that's the point of this little story I was about to tell up Vermont. Up comes this fellow wearing a political button. And it was the best one I've ever seen. It said, "Wearing a button is not enough." We can't be a nation of button wearers, can we? That's just pathetic. So I'm here to say you're doing terrific work, but do more. Press harder. It's no longer enough to be progressive. We've been passively progressive for a long time. We've got to become aggressive again, because the powers that be have turned radically regressive. So, one thing to do is keep reaching out, and that's what CCI does a good job of. But all of us have to do that. Keep thinking of people who aren't in this room, who need to be in this room, and go find them. Don't sit around grump that they're not finding you. Go find them, because they have as big an interest in this as anybody else does. Jesse Jackson put it well some years ago. He said, "We might not all have come over on the same boat, but we are in the same boat now." That's a powerful political reality when you acknowledge that. So reach out, build those coalitions. Iowa with India, farmers, consumers, artisans, old people, young people, the environmentalists, chefs, and cafes, co-ops, even socially responsible corporations like Dr. Bronner's Soap and Stonyfield Farm Yogurt, Organic Valley Family of Farms, Cliff Bar, others are behind you on this GMO issue specifically. And they're behind, by the way, pushing in Washington State, where there will be a vote next month on labeling GMOs. And we're on the move there. So. I think of our movements like this in terms of a little hardware store that's near my home in South Austin. It's not a big box thing. It's not quite as big as this chapel here. But it's a great store. First of all, you don't have to buy that whole carton of nails. You know, they'll sell you two nails. You know, I need two nails. All right. They'll say, "Well, what are you trying to do?" "Well, I want to build a pulpit, because I just feel like preaching in the morning, so I need to build a pulpit." And they say, "Well, let's pencil it out here and see what you need." You know? They'll loan you a tool. You can take a tool home and bring it back. This store is called Harold's Hardware. And the slogan at Harold's is, "Together, we can do it yourself." Now, that has to be our slogan, doesn't it? Because we can't do it ourselves. But together, we can do just damn near anything, in fact. And then a final thing to do is just persevere. You don't win the first time out, you know. From the the great suffrage movement, the three great ladies, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and the others who led that, they never lived to vote. Not one of them ever got to vote. 70 years it took from that first meeting in upstate New York to the final constitutional amendment allowing women to vote. The civil rights movement, there are a lot of people, Bishop, I'm sure you are well aware of this, who think that Martin Luther King was alone there, and that created the Voting Rights Act and the Public Accommodation Act and all that followed out of that, without understanding that there have been decades, generations of nameless people in backwater county after backwater county in the South who fought, bled, and died to make it possible for that moment in 1963 to exist. So you just got to keep going. My friend Willie Nelson put it to me like this once. He said, "Hightower, the early bird might get the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese." I want to pencil that out for some of the slower ones. All right. Anyway, enough of this. I'm so pleased with what you're doing, and it's really summed up in the great anthem that Patti Smith put together. People have the power to dream, to rule, to wrestle the world from fools. Thank you for what you're doing to wrestle the world from fools.